Good afternoon, everyone. So this talk's going to be a little bit different. So our first speakers talked about sort of what happens when faculty identify a need for LGBT public health education. Then our last speaker talked about, well, what happens when students don't have faculty locally? They have, you know, a mentoring mechanism that they can do remotely. This talk is going to fill the last gap, I think, in this series in talking about sort of what happens when students identify a need locally and build enough momentum around themselves at their institution and get things off the ground and actually put a course on. And so I'm going to walk you through sort of how we built that momentum, how we identified the need, how we aligned resources locally and outside of UNC, how we executed the course, and lastly and most importantly, I think, is how we've laid the groundwork for sustainability of such a course, that it's not just a one-time sort of disingenuous course offering here and there. No conflicts of interest to disclose. So I think it's really important to lay the groundwork and let you all know sort of the environment in which we operated. I think, you know, if people hear about UNC, they might think, oh, Southern red state, conservative, just had a marriage amendment on the ballot. But quite oppositely, UNC, it was actually a quite supportive environment, not a hostile environment at all. Quite frankly, I think that it was an issue of, well, we don't have any faculty who really do research on LGBT public health. So what can we do? So just to go through, when I say the school, I mean the Gilling School of Global Public Health at UNC. So the school has been acutely aware of diversity and inclusion issues across the school and within its departments for a number of years now. And we've had a diversity and inclusion task force, which I sat on, looking at these issues and sort of, you know, getting subgroups together and writing recommendations to the dean of the school. And we worked very intimately with this group, sort of lobbying for the course and lobbying for resources for LGBT health research across the campus. Also, the Health Sciences LGBTQ Alliance is a student organization bringing together students, meeting regularly from the schools of medicine, dentistry, nursing, public health, and social work. And an important activity that they did, and I actually should credit Derek. Derek took the lead on this, was to write a white paper talking about, yes, LGBT health is public health, and this is why we need this course and courses like this on campus. That white paper was actually quite influential in lobbying for the course and at different levels of policymakers on campus. And like I just mentioned, we had regular conversations and trying to engage administrators both at all different levels, so degree program directors, department chairs, deans of schools, really trying to make the case for this course and show that we can make this happen. Importantly, I want to talk about sort of how we then moved, and we got the momentum behind us and sort of convinced people that, yes, we need this course. There's the IOM report coming out. There's plenty of research showing these dangerous disparities for these groups, but we had nothing on campus. And for a student coming into the School of Global Public Health and hearing that, yes, there are these other schools doing such research, and to be at the school and not have those resources locally, it can be a very isolating experience. So I did not push that. So the first step was really to develop a comprehensive syllabus, and I cannot stress the importance enough of having a really solidified syllabus. So having course objectives, a reference list, weekly objectives, and really everything was there. So, you know, whenever we got any opposition from anybody saying, well, two doctoral students writing in the middle of their dissertations wanting to teach this course, you're crazy, it's going to slow you down, we'd already done all of the groundwork for this. Everything was ready. All we had to do was actually teach the class. And we got feedback from the University Center for Faculty Excellence to make sure that it was a really rigorous syllabus. The other important aspect was having faculty sponsors who were really engaged and were advocates for us, both within the two departments. So I was in the Department of Health Policy and Management, and Derek's in the Department of Health Behavior. And really having those people advocate for us at all levels of the department, of the school's administration, really to make sure that we could do this. I am sorry, it's going by itself. Sorry for the possession of the computer. Moving along from having the syllabus to actually launching the course was an interesting step there. Departmental approval. So we wanted to make sure that this course actually stood on its leg like any other course. that there were no accusations of conflict of interest or whatnot. So, for example, my advisor was a very powerful person in the department. I made sure that he didn't know about the course until we actually had the syllabus done and it actually went through my department's executive committee for approval, so that no one said, oh, well, you just got it through because Morris got it through. We made sure that everybody was on the same page and that, you know, it was just as solidified as any other course offering on campus. And the requisite publicity, we made sure that we got plenty of emails blasted out, flyers and whatnot, to make sure that we had enough students in the course. We had 20 slots allotted to us. And also we contacted potential guest speakers ahead of time just to make sure that they were on the same page and that we really could offer our students the best resources available in this experience. Moving through and actually executing the course. So the format was a graduate seminar, 3 credits, 2 hours and 50 minutes a week. And really, this was a great format for us because Derek and I, yes, we're both students, so it allowed for mutual learning, right? And we did sit down every week and sort of block out the class in 15 to 20 minute blocks. And we tried to schedule it as much as possible, but I think at least for me, within the first 2 weeks, I realized that I'm really not pushing this. I realized within the first 2 weeks that, you know, we could schedule the course all we wanted, but the students were so engaged and that we could schedule the course out, but the students were so motivated and engaged that that they would just take the conversation in any direction, in any number of directions. And it was a really exciting and fun, engaged class. We made sure to keep current events in the class as well and sort of just broaden the experience of the students. Assignments, we had reading reaction papers, a group project, and an activity with the LGBT service organization. And I will say that the service learning component was a little bit hit or miss, but you know, the next iteration of a class could use a little bit. I think our recommendation would be to solidify those relationships with outside organizations beforehand. So we made sure to have, again, like I mentioned, to an enriching experience for the students, pooling across national leaders in the field of LGBT public health research. And what we did was we used technology, really. And actually, a lot of the faculty that heard about this class were really excited that we used Skype. It didn't sound very novel to me, but it sounded great to them. So we Skyped in. We had some local speakers, but most of our speakers were non-local, and we Skyped them in. We had one speaker a week for the most part, and that worked out quite well. And also importantly, we wanted to make sure that the course wasn't just a research course. We wanted to make sure that students who were interested in public health practice did not feel disenfranchised in the course. So we had a lot of people come in and talk about practice and in the community, which also enriched the students' experience greatly, we believe. And also, like I mentioned, students took the class in a number of directions that we did not anticipate, but were all really great. I think I learned more than I actually gave into the course at the end of the day. For example, you know, we had one student from Russian Eastern European Studies. We did not expect this student to register, and I quite frankly was shocked when I looked at the register and the roster at the beginning of the semester. But this student was fantastic. She had done policy work in Kazakhstan, I believe, and we did not need a global health expert to come in. We had one right in the class, so it was phenomenal. Evaluation. So Derek and I met, like I mentioned, weekly to outline the course and make sure that we knew what page we were on. And we also did a lot of introspection. Since it was our first attempt at the class, we wanted to make sure that, you know, we were grounded in the experience. We had had good classes, bad classes on our own, and we wanted to make sure that, you know, the students were getting out of it what they wanted. And we frequently spoke with students in the class, but we also did have formal mechanisms like a mid-course evaluation, which I can't stress highly enough. We were able to correct the course midway, so a lot of students were saying, you know what, you're throwing a lot of readings at us, right? We're not getting a chance to really digest these readings, so we actually cut down to about 3 or 4 each week. And I'm happy to say that the course was quite well received from the students. We actually broke departmental medians and means for our evaluations. I'll show you some of the quotes here at the bottom. But we were all overall very pleased with the course, and I will say that the faculty sponsors who came to the course they came about every other session, I would say, that they were in the course with us. They also really appreciated the course and say that they learned a lot, too. And our students also evaluated the guest speakers so that we have a repository so that we can show the next instructors of the course what worked, what didn't work, who to invite, who not to invite again. Importantly, I want to talk about sustainability, right? So again, you know, students are transient. So Derek and I put this course on for the UNC School of Public Health, you know, for a one time, but I've already graduated. Derek's on his way to graduating. So what we've done, we've identified next instructors. We have one lined up for next year. Excuse me. We've also packaged the course. It's ready to go in a zip file. So we have the readings, we have the syllabus, we have PowerPoint presentations, we have videos used. Everything's really ready to go, and to make it as easy as possible for this course to be taught again. We debriefed with our two faculty sponsors from each department and talked about how the course could be improved. But like I mentioned, you know, we did a lot of introspection throughout the course at the end of the course to make sure that we really knew what happened and what worked and didn't work. One thing we talked about was, is it better to leave it as a three-credit course or change to a smaller seminar, and that's a really important point given that, you know, Derek and I did this for free for the school, and if they're not able to find funding or secure funding for another instructor, could the two faculty sponsors put it on as a one or one and a half credit course next year? All right. Hold on. So next steps. So this is an important point, right? So we wanted to make sure that this was an elective that could be offered once a year, once every 2 years or whatnot. And actually, this was, like I mentioned, there was a white paper through the LGBT Health Sciences Alliance that I personally used to lobby with the Diversity and Inclusion Task Force. And actually, that was inserted into the white paper that went to the Dean of the School of Public Health. And it does say that the course should be offered at least once every 2 years. So it is there in policy. Hopefully that's going to be executed in the future, but we've also worked very hard to make sure that the course content is disseminated throughout the school, put into core courses throughout each department. That's already happening in health behavior, but you know, making sure that it's not just one course, that students across the Gilling School of Global Public Health do not get their public health education and leave and have no exposure to these populations. And the last point, an important point, but one that students might have some issues affecting. We can put on a course, but I don't know about how well we can hire faculty on our own. So securing funding and instructors, like I mentioned, neither of us were paid to teach the course in the spring. And that's an important point. You know, I was luckily funded under a T32 from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. Derek was funded through a school-wide fellowship, and that was great. You know, we could say we need no funding, we need nothing from you. That's why we use Skype, to be honest, because we didn't have funds to bring in speakers, and that worked. It worked out well. But again, this is when we showed it worked. This course worked. It was well received, and there's sort of a footprint now. So it might be time to be frank, pony up the funds for next year. Students, are, like we mentioned, are a great catalyst, but we need to make sure that faculty are engaged in this idea. So we worked really hard to have an interdepartmental model. I thought that it was very important, as did Derek, to make sure that it wasn't just a health behavior course. I think the natural home for these courses a lot of times is a health behavior or community health department, but we wanted to make sure that we had students from across the campus if possible, and definitely with across the school. So like I mentioned, we had 10 spots from health behavior, 10 spots from health policy. At the end of the day, we had a majority of students from health behavior, but we did have students from across the school, coming from, like I mentioned, Russian and Eastern European studies, nursing, social work, maternal and child health, that all came together and really gave a unique perspective to the course. And as we saw from our mid-course evaluations, we did retool some of the readings and activities to make sure that the students got out of it what they wanted. So yes, policy fell a little bit to the wayside more than I liked. We did definitely still cover policy, but again, class composition dictated course content emphasis. We wanted to make sure that it, you know, really LGBT health is an academic and a research endeavor. It's not just an elective. It's not just a student issue. It's not just a whim, right? It needs to happen. And again, having a white paper, having a document that we could use to lobby for such a course really helped. For me, the main takeaway point, though, is that this was a very successful proof of concept, right? So we showed that, yes, students wanted to make this happen, and we did make it happen. Even though we are in restrained economic and personnel resource, and times of constrained economic and personnel resources, such a course doesn't, you know, you can't just turn your back on it. If you really want it to happen, you can make it happen, and students are a vehicle for that end goal. And I think the course going off as wildly successful as it did, I should probably be a little more modest, but it was a good course. It sends three very powerful psychological messages to three different parties that I can identify. First, to students, it says, you know, if you're unhappy with something, if you're unhappy with the paucity of a course, if a course doesn't exist that you feel the need for, if you're unhappy with an out-of-date policy, for example, if you come at it in a very structured and thoughtful manner and build enough momentum behind you, you can actually affect change. That's a really important message, at least for a student, right? You might come up against some red tape, some bureaucracy, some power differentials, but you can make it happen. The second message it sends is to faculty, saying LGBT health and sexual minority health, I am not making this move, is, you know, they're important issues that are going to creep up over time. They're going to come up in your courses. And just like an awkward or a mismanaged conversation or course session on racial and ethnic disparities can be a nightmare, so can one about LGBT health. So you might want to prepare yourself. So by supporting this endeavor, we take some of the onus for individual faculty to, you know, really become experts in LGBT health, and we provide a home for this course. Also, like I mentioned, the syllabus was very well put together, and it was modular for one specific purpose. And that purpose was specific weeks could be lifted out of our syllabus, right? So if we had an instructor in health policy who was interested in advanced care planning, we had a week on advanced care planning in sexual minority populations that they could really just lift out. We had readings, activities, and speakers that they could lift out and put in their specific courses. If we had an injury epi professor who wanted to talk about sampling issues, we could lift out that week and give it to them. So we could permeate this content throughout the school, and it was sort of a ready-made cookie-cutter fashion. And the third message that it sends us to administrators saying, students did this, students identified this need. Yes, we're at UNC, ranked number 2 in schools of public health, and we don't have this course. Again, you know, we've set a footprint for this course. Students know about this. If students are coming to this institution expecting these resources or come here and want to explore these resources and there's nothing here, maybe it's time that we start exploring how to actually solidify and substantiate this course within our offerings and substantiate these research endeavors across our campus. I want to make sure that we acknowledge the people who really were influential in this course. So our faculty champions, Brian Weiner, Noel Brewer, departmental champions, Morris Weinberger, Andrew Biddle, and Joanne Earp. We had a fantastic teaching assistant, Justin Smith. And I will say that, you know, I want to thank the Summer Institute at Fenway. We took a lot of material for them and took a lot of guidance from them in developing the course. And our guest speakers and our phenomenal students, like I mentioned, we had a really engaged group of students who, you know, there were a few bumps on the road at the beginning, but they stuck with us, and I think we've created a very dynamic base on campus about LGBT health, so we're really excited. Thank you.